Hello and welcome to the Behind the Collective podcast. My name is Tiff and this is another episode part of the National Sheep and Goat Traceability Task Force in collaboration with Sheep Producers Australia to support the industry with the move to electronic identification in sheep and goats. And today we are talking to Sam. Sam's based in Tasmania and we're chatting to him as both someone who owns an abattoir and is also a producer with background in ag tech. Firstly, thank you so much for joining us and giving up some of your time to chat to us about all things EIDs. I think we'll start with the hardest question. Well, I think it's the hardest one is tell us about you. Who are you? Where are you recording this episode from?
Thank you. No, it's good to be on here. I enjoy, any knowledge that I can spread and help is a great thing. I've been helped a lot in the industry, so I'm happy to kind of share the love, so to speak. My name's Sam Trithewey. I am a farmer in Tasmania, although I'm actually in the process of significantly scaling back our farming program to the point where I'll be more of a casual farmer and I'm going to be focusing on our small abattoir that we run, which also has EID implications. I grew up farming in Tassie on and off, and then I jackarooed on the mainland up in the New England and have spent about 15 odd years working around Australian agriculture and, overseas as well in America and the UK on farms, and ended up working in ag tech, in agri-politics, I suppose agribusiness, and I've kind of come back on farm. So, and now having the abattoir as well, I've kind of seen the abattoir supply chain needs and wants at a small scale of EID, obviously. And then, like you and I were just talking, I've kind of grown up with RFIDs in cattle. I actually can't remember a time in my adult life where I've not used them. So, that's kind of the starting intro.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about, you've mentioned your abattoir. Tell us a bit more about that and your farming system.
Yep. So when we set this business up about 6 years ago, we had to kind of raise capital because I wasn't given a family farm, and we've since bought another two farms with investors. So over the last 6 years, we got to around it's about 1,500 acres, running about 1,700 head of cattle. So we've got pretty good quality country down here, so we can run stocking rates pretty high, and that was a vertically integrated business. So we set up a we're right into kind of, I suppose, chemical-free regenerative farming systems. I've grown up with them. So we went pretty hard after that with a grass-fed Wagyu product. So it's a regenerative grass-fed Wagyu product. And we were doing other things. We started out doing dairy beef down here. I didn't have enough money to buy cows. So we went high-growth red Wagyu bulls into dairy heifers and bought all those calves back and just became a growing, fattening operation. And yeah, so we've done all kinds of different stuff, but essentially it was a vertically integrated beef business, and obviously all the way through to the consumer. And we built a beef brand around that through social media, storytelling and everything else. And then halfway through that process, the abattoir came along. We were using that little abattoir anyway. Tasmania still has a lot of small scale kind of multi-species abattoirs, which is pretty cool, unlike much of the mainland. And it's half an hour down the road, came up on the market. It was one of those, Dad said, you're either an effing idiot or you're effing brave. And he said, probably a bit of both. still haven't worked out which one I am, but it's actually going quite well. It's been a huge learning curve becoming a meat processor as well. But yeah, that's kind of, and that's taken on a life of its own now. And it's actually kind of outgrown the farming side of the business.
And so EIDs, how do they work within both of those businesses?
So, I mean, obviously from the farming perspective, there's a regulatory compliance point that when they, leave the farm, they've got to have it on them. Having used them extensively for cattle in Southern Australia, it's been an inventory management tool. And I mean, you name me any sophisticated business that doesn't manage their inventory. And I suppose if you're not managing and you're not measuring, you can't manage. So on farm, the basics, the ABCs are obviously average daily gain, tracking animal performance. We've also been able to relate that now with the apps and stuff. You can do all kinds of great stuff, making notes of certain animals on their file on your phone. And then when that animal gets scanned back in, there's an alert pops up. You had noticed it in the paddock, it had, I don't know, bottle jaw, or it was lame in one particular foot or something you needed to look at. So it kind of helps the animal welfare kind of side of it as well. So they're all the kind of on-farm implications in amongst doing all kinds of different things nowadays with, there's oh God, what's it called? The in paddock weighing systems and all these kinds of cool things. So it enables you to individually basically individual animal management, right? That's what it does. And then through the abattoir, it's designed to obviously provide lifetime traceability to that particular animal, which translates to that carcass, which in a big abattoir should translate into the boxes of meat. However, ours is so small, we don't kind of really do that in that we can trace that to the butcher shop or the IGA or wherever it may be, but we don't sell box meat. We're a service kill facility. We don't sell meat like a normal abattoir does. We're really a service provider. We're more like a dry cleaner than a retail clothing store, if that makes sense. We don't buy clothing and sell clothing. We basically process clothing and provide a service to our customers. So therefore, the traceability implications for us are no different from a government compliance point of view, but they're not really the same in relation to having, I suppose, that full traceable kind of accountability. That said, the buck stops with us. So we have a meat safety inspector assess the meat. He puts the stamp on the side of the animal still with the old stamps. And that means that that is a food grade product, traceable now. And if there's an issue, it actually comes back on us anyway. So,
And so with the actual EIDs at a like an abattoir, how does that work? So you'd obviously be scanning them in, you'd be processing a fair few animals using equipment. Is there any challenges around that, or what have you had to, any adjustments you've made or any recommendations from anyone else, say in WA, who would be at early stages of looking at what equipment to get?
from an abattoir perspective or
Yeah,
farming?
abattoir.
So to be completely upfront with you, we're actually in the early stages of setting this up ourselves. I know the system back to front. I've been using these systems both, and I can happy to talk to hardware. I've used all the different hardware, lots of different apps. Having worked in ag tech, I saw all these apps go from ideas to actual on-farm, implementation. But in the abattoir, again, we're quite small, so the bigger places will have it's all basically they have an antenna. Gallagher make an antenna, they come by, it scans it, and they can then log that animal onto the carcass tag. So we'll be doing that, except it's going to be more manual with a wand. So we'll wand it on, like wand the animal, record the RFID, and then it's as much about capturing that RFID onto the tag, and being able to trace that tag, because obviously the tag literally gets thrown out now. So we need to take the information off that tag and put it on the carcass label, which is now attached to the animal throughout the processing or manufacturing process. But we also need to then take that EID information and, I suppose, kill that animal off the national register. So that's what happens. There's two things that have to happen. And as for how you do that with hardware and software, there's lots of different options. And it took me quite some time to work out what was going to be best for us as well.
Yeah, and so your experience in ag tech, so specifically for sheep and goat growers in WA, what would your advice be? You've got a really, I think, diverse skill base and experience both on farm, abattoir, with what you've done. We've got guys who are at really early stages. What would be your key pointers or advice for them?
It's probably not going to come as any surprises. For Christ's sake, just keep it simple. I got lost in my technology journey, I suppose, after helping ag tech startups and working in ag tech. And I went to a lot of the ag tech in Perth meetup groups there, that were held at, I think, at the Findex offices or I can't remember, the co-working space in Perth. And so I kind of got really wrapped up in ag tech. And so when I came back to the farm, I was like, right, I'm going to use this technology. What's our tech stack and all this kind of wanky stuff. And I kind of got on farm and I was like, wow, I think tech has actually become our biggest distraction. And I'm not just talking about on farm or in the supply chain. I'm talking more broadly in life, I think. And I don't mean to get all deep on you here, but I think that tech has become a really big distraction on farm in that, if I look at the fundamentals of what I do on quite a decent size, beef operation, and then I look at some of my mates that milk 1,200 dairy cows twice a day. I've got Costa Group that grow, that over 50% of Australia's blackberry production happens on either side of us. We're around guys that grow potatoes and carrots on the same ground as we run cattle. We're in about a meter of rainfall here. Like, I actually look at their businesses and they actually don't use a lot of technology. And I don't mean to digress the conversation here, but I think it's really important to remember a lot of what I'm doing on farm is actually not all that different to what we were doing 15, 20 years ago. I just can now send emails and track stuff on my phone. So I think ag tech got a bit lost and it got a bit ahead of itself. And I did as a farmer and I got a bit wrapped up on it. Now, don't get me wrong, there are farmers out there that tech's their thing, like it's a hobby, like it's actually an interest, but I actually don't think, and the best farmers I've met actually don't use a lot of tech, they just use the basics. So I think going back to your original questions, just keep it really, really simple. I think we just need to, you know, if you're a small scale abattoir, there's a great little app that was developed by a meat guy in Victoria and Tasmania called NLIS Buddy. And it's actually a beautiful, simple, basic app that's actually free. And it's designed to specifically do what small abattoirs need to do, which is to kill animals on and off and upload to the national database. So I think just keeping it simple, even on farms where you're going to have to do this, like don't start with individual animal management. Like the kind of, it's very simple to do. I mean, your Gallagher or TruTest scales will do it automatically. But I think just kind of starting out with what's the objective here and what's the easiest and quickest way to get there. I suppose it's just interesting, like anything, when you invest in infrastructure, to maybe be mindful of what you might like to do and that you've got the options to do that with the type of hardware and technology that you want to buy. Like there's no point going and buying a simple, basic, like I think they were called a TWR1, the simple Gallagher head unit, and then kind of waking up in 2 years after you spent whatever they're worth, you know, 2 grand, and going, oh, actually, I want to do individual animal management and record certain traits at certain times, you know, crush side traits and stuff, and that the technology that you bought isn't quite right. So for the extra bit of money, maybe buy the duck's nuts, and then you've always got it there if you need it. So.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So your top, now I'm jumping between you as an abattoir owner because it's fascinating and a farmer. So for farmers, what would be your top three things from an operational level? Someone has said some are really basic, like create little hooks on the land marking thing, order your tags early. Have you got any things that you find you tell yourself every year, oh, I wish I'd done that, or working for other people, you would have been like, oh, they should be doing that?
I think actually one of the biggest bugbears of mine with hardware is I opted for on the farm on our crush an antenna. So as soon as an animal walks in, or it, sorry, as soon as an antenna picks up a tag, it bleeps and picks up on the scales. The problem with an antenna, just for everyone that's watching, is you lose control. So if you've got a fairly, you know, excited mob of cattle. And you've put one in the crush, and some idiot comes up behind the one that's come in and pushes itself forward, as sometimes they do. It'll scan that, and if you've ingested the RFID into the system and you've corresponded it manually to the management tag, so for instance, I use all different colors. Some might be, you know, yellow 722, so I'll have Y722. So on the screen, it'll say when it scans the RFID, it'll say Y722. So I know it's yellow tag 722. However, as I've gotten a bit looser, like I was saying, keep it simple, and I've not been so anally retentive about putting a lot of these stuff in, I've not assigned management tag numbers to the RFID tag. So I actually don't know what tag belongs to what animal. But after a while, I've worked out with the way I'm running my business, it actually doesn't really matter. As long as I can record that individual animal weight gain and I can track it and I'm getting a good average of the mob or the performance of specific genetics in relate, because I know where they're all from anyway, I don't need that, digress, is if that animal bursts in and scans itself, you don't know which one is on the scales, like which tag's been registered. And if you then accept the weight that the scales are saying, and it's the wrong animal, next time it comes through, it'll throw that animal out. So just things like that. Whereas the good thing about the wand is you can delete it and specifically scan the animal that you need. But the problem with the wand is it needs this, which is called a hand and an arm. The antenna is beautiful because it's one less job to do. So that's just a little hardware thing. If you've got the time, you've got the setup where an antenna gives you that extra little bit of control, but knowing that it's an extra job to do, well, then it's fine. Whereas when the antenna's working and you're just pumping them through, you know, if you're using a tele, not a telehandler, that's a bit over the top. If you're using a sheep handler, that's restricting them down to a controlled single file, an antenna would be a no-brainer because you don't have to touch anything. So yeah, that's just some of something. And of course, ordering tags early, all that kind of stuff, that's like anything. I order all mine online now. It's actually cheaper and easier, and they just get express posted. And I do that for management tags as well. It's called Integrity Systems, and like any integrity system, it's like a chain, right? Like the supply chain, value chain. And as any chain is only as strong as its weakest link, I think there's some really weak links in this system that were hard to solve when the system was designed a couple of decades ago. You and I, Tiffany, are used to using, apps on here that are designed by really smart people that understand design. They understand the way humans want to interact with technology. They're usually smart, intuitive interfaces that make the whole process a real joy. We all use apps every day that are designed with this in mind, right? And you'll soon not use an app if it's difficult, right? We've fortunately or unfortunately having to subscribe to software as a service, third-party apps and programs that have integrated with the Neil system, but are using a 2024 user interface. And of course, AgriWeb as an example, is really great because you're doing everything else on it anyway. So it's easy just to upload that mob because you sold them on a truck. And I kind of get that. But you'd almost pay the subscription to AgriWeb just so you can use it to use the Neil system.
Like, because everyone's probably a lot of people who might listen to this are going to be at the early stages of this. You've already sort of been through it to an extent. What else would you tell them?
It just is what it is. I mean, get your hardware sorted, and that'll then also dictate your software, I suppose. What's the outcome you're trying to focus on? What do you want to achieve in the paddock? I mean, the guys that are running studs are using some pretty amazing crush side data capturing software that's integrated into the handheld wand or the antenna or the scales and all that kind of stuff. So those kinds of people already are using this stuff, or at least they're after something very specific. There's a lot of farm management software out there, and I think in some cases they're an inch deep and a mile wide, which can be really frustrating. And so it's about shopping around. Is it Sapien technology? Is it AgriWeb? Is it Meyer Grazing? Although they don't do individual animal management last time I checked. So you've kind of got to pick your management system. Well, you know what? I did all of that and I've spent tens of thousands of dollars on subscriptions. And now I actually just like the free version that comes with Gallagher. I grew up with TrueTest and Speedrite products, but much like what we were just talking about with technology, Gallagher have actually got really smart, clever software people that work for them, and they've designed really easy to use software. So that's how they won my dollar. So I went to a TWR5 head unit with the antenna. And their Gallagher app, which syncs to your online version on your computer, is actually really good to use. It's really easy, and it actually solves a lot of my problems. I can do most of what I need to do through that app. So I suppose it's about working out. I find the TrueTest apps and software still fairly clunky and not as easy to use, as intuitive and as sexy as the Gallagher stuff. But that's up to everyone. Some people might find the simplicity of TrueTest, much easier than I do. So, horses for courses, but it's just about managing that upload because I struggle with this. It's the buyer's responsibility to upload and change the database. And that is in where I've had problems in the past. But as I said, with the abattoir, it's a bit different because we now have software that can do that. So.
And now I want to ask you a few questions as the abattoir owner. So carcass traceability, for those who are listening who don't know what is it and what does it mean?
So really, I'm not an expert on this, so I'm just a farmer who bought an abattoir. So you'd be
You
able to
know
find
more than
some.
me. I'm just trying to start. I'm not even the farmer part yet. So you're doing well.
So my understanding is the Neil system was really created for traceability and biosecurity reasons. That's why it was created. And it was designed 20 plus years ago to do exactly that, was to provide carcass traceability. So if someone gets sick from a piece of meat or a certain butcher shop, they can trace that meat all the way back to the farm, and if there's any, exotic, or diseases, they can then trace things and start to trace movement. So that's why it's actually needed and used, is so they can trace animals from farm to farm, farm to abattoir, farm to feedlot, and vice versa, or however it works. Just so if there's outbreaks, they can try and control. A lot of it with vendor decks, which are the bane of my existence, are still paper-based and don't correspond to the animals. And that's where, when I was saying the chain is only as strong as its weakest link, that's like a huge question for me, is you fill out this piece of paper that gets shoved in a gearbox, shoved in a glove box, or gets turfed on our desk at the abattoir, and there's no accountability for us out the other side other than we've just got to keep it. It doesn't go anywhere. What if someone loses the book? Like, they're still using carbon copy. Like, I know, and we've now moved on the farm to electronic NVDs online. So, but essentially, it is to trace that. So, we need to trace the animal from the farm to the abattoir to, even the meat safety inspector that was on that day, the truck that it goes on to the end destination. And that's the whole reason, is really to not only be able to manage biosecurity or disease outbreaks, but you've also got to think of it from a sustainability, and I don't mean environmental sustainability, but from an industry sustainability, a competitive advantage for Australian red meat. And white meat, because pigs have it as well. Interesting, their NVDs are not called NVDs, they're called a pig pass, which is quite cool.
Yeah, we need to up our game, change the
Yeah,
name.
I know. The first time I was at the abattoir, they go, do I bring the pig pass documents? I'm like, wow, what's that? That sounds really cool.
Passport.
But anyway, so really we've got to also look at the kind of holistic industry perspective, and it means that the reps that we pay to sit in, international locations that work for Meat and Livestock Australia, in the red meats example, they can go into key markets, negotiate, promote our Australian product, and say that we've got full traceability. These are the mitigation techniques and tools, technology. Our farmers do this, our industry does that. So you can see from an industry perspective, it offers Australia a competitive advantage, because a lot of other Australia, which is frightening when you actually look at the system. And as you've worked out, I'm not a huge fan of the way it works, that it's actually still probably the best in the world. So you can see from an industry perspective why there's so much to lose by not having it, or that it's upheld and maintained, because it actually is significantly responsible market access, which impacts, export markets, which impacts industry, commodity prices, and all the rest.
No, so and this is even EIDs aside, as a farmer turned abattoir owner, what are your biggest learnings from this entire process or journey?
That it doesn't really matter what color their jacket is, they all look the same on a hook. So,
That'll be controversial.
sorry for all Murray Grey, Hereford,
It's probably
Speckled
the most
Duck.
controversial thing you've said.
Oh, yeah. No, it's hilarious. Yeah, at the end of the day, yeah, they all look the same on a hook. Our Wagyus, obviously, and Wagyus marble. So, you get a slightly different carcass there for obvious reasons. Oh, I think it's understandably, it's when you put a shoe on the other foot, right, it's helped me be a lot more sympathetic to farmers and farming. Like, the amount of having also just finished my meat safety inspector's ticket now, just seeing, like, it's getting a bit grim now, but pulling, all the offal apart and looking at the impacts of drenching or not drenching in their organs, witnessing on-farm management practices, both mental through stress or physical through management, seeing that translate to the carcass, either in its whole form or, like I said, organs. Interestingly, we see a lot more problems in sheep than we do cattle when it comes to worms and preventable kind of parasites. And I think it's because cattle maybe are more expensive and are worth more, perhaps, in some, I mean, kind of not really, but not really. And so people seem to look after them a bit better, maybe. So that's kind of been really interesting. So I've been a lot more sympathetic and understanding, and it's probably made me a better farmer in some ways. Likewise, on the other side, it's made me see things in the paddock, or make decisions on farm that are gonna, I know, influence. Because And you know, touching on this, and it's important, and I'm no expert, but for those that are interested, there's this thing called Livestock Data Link, and I'm not sure how effective it is, but it was essentially a way for producers to get live access to their carcass data as it's processed, you know, or the day or two after, so that can then inform on-farm decisions. So if I'm, you know, finding that, you know, 30% of the cattle that I sent in had better marbling, you know, they had, I don't know, better eye muscle area, better intramuscular fat, whatever the metrics are that you're after may be, and you've got their NLIS number. So, but that means that the farmer can go, all right, well, I know which 20 animals those ones were, and they were sired by this bull. Da 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 da. So Livestock Data Link is a thing that MLA had worked up with processors to try and give producers better access to actual individual carcass data, which would better inform, you know, better on-farm decisions. So that's quite cool. So I suppose I've been doing that, but without the industry bodies and technology, by actually walking in and looking at my carcasses every single week and knowing, you know, because without digressing, our cattle have come from lots of different farms, from different bulls, different cows. So it's been really cool to see the impacts of different, you know, genetics and management as well.
And so that carcass traceability and that carcass feedback, do you think that's a thing that is, we hear a lot about it, you know, do you believe it's a thing of the future?
My opinion is absolutely right. Because if you think about the red meat sector, it's actually a very unsophisticated commodity market in that we don't get paid on quality. So if you think of every other commodity group, they get paid on quality. If you take barley in, you get malt barley or you get feed barley. If you're a dairy farmer, you don't get paid on liters anymore. They're a bit more sophisticated than liters. You get paid on milk solids, which is your fat and your protein. So most commodities now get paid on quality. Beef and sheep meat farmers just get paid on yield. So they don't actually get paid on quality. At what point do farmers go, well, hang on, if, you know, if you're telling me that 60% of the 60 of the 100 that I sent in were in the top 5%, and we know that you're going to sell them in a premium market, why am I being rewarded for sending you in a better quality animal? Because if I was producing better quality milk, I'd get paid more. If I've got a better quality herd, if I'm really good at producing malt barley instead of feed barley, I get paid more. So why aren't I getting paid more for sending in a better quality product than old Joe down the road, who's got, you know, 20 cattle and he gets paid the same, you know, roughly per kilo that I do. So it opens up that conversation, which means that farmers actually have to get paid, you know, for the great work that they do. And so yes, I think it's the future. And we're starting to see that because they are doing IMF testing, I think, with sheep and stuff now. I think JBS might be doing a little bit of this. I know Gundagai Lamb are. So there are red meat processors that are starting to come onto that. I get paid on a Wagyu grid. So yeah, the more marbling I get, the more I pay, the more I get paid. And you know, I remember hearing at the Wagyu conference years ago is, you know, marbling is the only thing that pays more than yield. And it's something that Wagyu breeders remember, right? So I get paid on a Wagyu grid. So I do get paid on quality. The bottom end of my Wagyu grid is basically a good quality British bred, never ever, no grain, no antibiotics, no HGPs animal down here, which at the moment I think they're about 750 a kilo carcass weight. So I get paid on Wagyu, but the average producer, from my understanding, does not. And so yes, to answer your question, I believe it is a future, and yes, it'll happen, but it's not going to be met without a resistance by those that have been able to really, really enjoy the fruits of that grey area.
That's so interesting. Now, anything else? Any other things you want to add in? Anything you think everyone needs to know on their EID sort of journey? Anything to add?
Not really. I just think that, you know, as much as it can be a cumbersome, you know, regulatory requirement at times, and I understand the costs and all of that, I suppose from a business decision, it is what it is. You know, we live in Australia, it's a nanny state. We're often told what to do by the powers that be. You're not going to, you know, it's as probably as sure as death and taxes these days. You're going to have to do it if you want to sell into abattoirs and sale yards. So how can it benefit you? So you know, twist it into a positive, and you know, your top 20% are going to do that anyway. But how can you use the inventory management side to make you a better quality, a better farmer? And by tracking your weight gain, bringing them in, knowing that, a lot of people don't realize that every time you bring them into the yards, they actually lose weight. So knowing that you don't want to do it just for something to do, but by tracking weights on and off certain crops and actually seeing performance of individual animals, you can then translate that back to size and dams, certain genetic lines, all those things that I think most farmers will totally get. It's actually relatively easy to do, and the software now does a lot of that for you. So I think, just using that to increase, I think my final point is, Tiffany, it's the 80-20 rule, right? So EID, you're going to get 80% of the benefits with 20% of the effort. You get a free app, you go buy a couple of grand worth of technology, and you get 80% of the benefits that you can get from using EIDs as a management tool with 20% of the effort. If you want the remaining 80% of the benefit, sorry, if you want the remaining 20% of the benefit, that's going to require 80% of the work. And that's where you get those guys that just love that stuff. They live and breathe it. They're looking at weights on their app. I know that from the in-paddock weighing stations, it's been interesting. They have like their fingers on the pulse with their daily weight gain in the paddock, and they can directly relate it to changes in feed, but also weather and amazing stuff. So all of that helps you become a better manager because you can measure. So I think that's the thing. So that's probably my final comments.
Amazing. Thank you so much for that. Thank you so much, Sam. For more information, I encourage you to head to the Sheep Producers Australia website. Otherwise, please listen to a few other episodes in this series as we catch up with growers from across Australia with diverse backgrounds and different perspectives.